This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In 2014, the Election Commission announced a nationwide redrawing of electoral boundaries will be completed before the 14th general election. The EC is in the process of redelineating constituencies, with Sarawak recently subjected to the practice in April. How is redelineation being conducted and how does it impact election outcomes? We explored the issue with Dr. Wong Chin Huat, a political analyst at the Penang Institute. Ideally, the redelineation process should balance out disproportionate constituencies and ensure voters are better represented. Wong explains that redelineation is a double-edged sword.
Redelineation is a neutral term. It means redrawing of constituency. An ideal redelineation process will have a constituency at about equal size in terms of people, and their boundaries would correspond to some natural boundaries such as physical environment, socio-economic community, ethno-cultural communities, and so on. Deviation from a meaningful boundary with the intention to deliver an easier victory for a certain contesting party is called gerrymandering, while evasion from equal size of constituency is called malapportionment. To reduce overrepresentation and underrepresentation is exactly why we should have redelineation. The whole idea here is that every vote would have the same value. In other words, the constituency should have approximately equal number of voters. That is actually clearly stated in our federal constitution.
How has the EC performed in pursuing that ideal? Wong analyzes the EC's redelineation exercise in Sarawak before the April elections.
From what we have observed in Sarawak, out of the 71 original constituency, 38 were not touched by the redelineation process. So you have large constituency remain large, small constituency remain small, and only some changes happened in remaining 33 constituency, of which they were redivided into 44 of them. The largest parliamentary constituency in Sarawak, Ulu Rejang, is as big as Pahang in terms of geographical size. It had 23,637 voters after the last redelineation. The second largest is Baram, with 31,476 voters. Its geographical size is comparable to Perak. Both Ulu Rejang and Baram had less voters than the state average, which was 35,779. These are perfectly constitutional because the size of their constituency are so large. As we can see, one is comparable to Pahang, the other one is comparable to Perak. However, if we look at the smallest constituency in the state, Igan, the third smallest, Tanjung Manis, which is neighboring to Igan, these two constituencies are smaller than two-thirds of Negeri Sembilan. The question is, why are these two constituencies so small? Is it justified? They could have formed one single constituency.
Wong also observes that past redelineation exercises have not balanced out malproportioned constituencies in Peninsula.
If we take Selangor, for example, we are looking at the 2003 figure for comparison. The smallest seat, Sabah Bernam, had only 30,221 voters after redenation, while the largest seat, which was Kapa, then has 99,563 voters. And I read for you exactly what our constitution says. Section 2C of the 13th schedule says the number of electors within each constituency in a state ought to be approximately equal, except that having regard to the greater difficulties of reaching electors in the country district and the other disadvantages facing rural constituency area. So clearly the keyword here is approximately equal. Can the EC tell us in 2003, their mathematics told them that 99,563 was approximately equal to 30,221? Clearly not. But this is what EC has given to us.
While the EC has promised to rectify electoral boundaries, Wong observes it has been creating new parliamentary seats at the same time. This was most recently done in April's Sarawak state elections.
The Sarawak redelineation was accompanied with the increase of 11 seats. With the net increase of 11 seats, the seats that Barisan Nasional enjoyed a majority, a dominance, based on the 2013 voting pattern, have increased by 9. So 9 out of the 11 new seats in net calculation were favorable to the BN. So when we look at the outcome, BN has increased its seats from 56 to 72. We need to recognize that that increase of 16 seats, 9 were actually delivered by the EC. Only 7 can be substantially credited to the Sarawak BN and the Chief Minister Adnan Satin alone.
Increasing parliamentary seats is a separate process from redelineation. Wong deems such seat increases as unconstitutional as it is being done without the required constitutional amendments.
Constituency redelineation can happen without seat increase. To give a very good example as comparison, the House of Representatives of the United States had 435 members in 1911. At that time, their population is about 90 million. Today, the American population has tripled, but the number of congresspersons remain at 435. In Malaysia, however, the number of parliamentarians has grown from 144 in 1965 to 232 in 2005. And what is trickier is that the increase of seats should have happened before redelineation. However, what happened in the history, redelineation happened before seat increase. So, for example, in 2003, when redelineation took place for the Peninsula states, in the constitution, the number of parliamentary seats was 144. However, the EC tabled a proposal of 165 parliamentary seats. Then, the EC proposal was tabled in the parliament, and it was passed. Only after the redelineation proposal for 165 seats were passed, then Article 46, which provided for the number of parliamentary seats, was amended.
As parliamentary seats increase with the redelineation exercise, Wong fears that an expanding parliament could dilute the democratic process.
It's very simple. If you have a small parliament, then each parliamentarian has more weight. It's much easier for the parliamentarians to organize themselves. On the other hand, it's much harder for the government to buy off the parliamentarian. However, if you have a parliament that is huge, then each parliamentarian becomes much smaller in their influence. On the other hand, the government would find it much easier to buy them off. I oppose the growth of parliament all this while. I think we should, in fact, keep the size that what we have, because without increasing the time that parliament is in session, to have more parliamentarians simply means that each of them would have even less time to debate about our law and policy. In other words, we'll spend more money, employ more people, so each of them would do less work. It's just ridiculous.
It is against this backdrop that we await for GE14. That being said, is there evidence that redelineation has affected election outcomes in the past?
Let's compare BN landslide in 1995 and 2004. 1995 was the year when Dr. Mahathir, with his Vision 2020, won a landslide with 65% support. 2004 was Patlah landslide and slightly lower at 64% support. However, in terms of seats, BN won only 84% of seats in 1995, but in 2004, the percentage of seats was 91%. What happened between 1995 and 2004? Redelineation happened in 2003, and the number of parliamentary seats was increased from 193 to 219, an increase of 26 seats. When we have malapportionment and gerrymandering, the combined effect, together with the natural uneven distributions of voters, is what we call vote seat disproportionality, meaning the vote won by different parties have different value. I give you the most extreme example. In 1986, a vote for BN was equivalent to 40 votes for PAS. In 2004, a vote for BN was equivalent to 26 votes for PKR. Why? Because PAS and PKR in these two elections have secured high numbers of votes, but the votes were not concentrated enough to translate into seats. In both elections, they only won one seat, despite winning over 15% and nearly 9% of votes respectively.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.